a little retro intro for everyone out there. Good day and good evening, everybody. It is Wednesday, May 3rd, 2023. Wednesday Night Dynamite is in full force. I am Don Tony. And as you can hear and see, a little bit of a change as far as the Wednesday show. I'll get into it in a moment, but I can't believe this is officially episode 175 of these Wednesday shows. AEW's been around for a while now. Episode 175. Now, overall, it's unofficially episode 5,284 of what I do going back to 1997. I can't believe it's been that many years. Some of you say, I don't know when to quit, but at the end of the day, I still enjoy pro wrestling enough to opine and do what I do. And there's enough of you out there that still find some enjoyment in what I do. And that's why we continue. Now, I am never content. I am never happy overall with what I present. I'm always looking to improve, to tweak, to change, condense, you know, expand, however you want to look at it. You know, to think 4 years ago, I was looking at the Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle hour. 1 hour of content a week, and that's it. I mean, times have changed, but in a good way. Now, as far as these Wednesday shows going forward, obviously this show that you're tuning into right now is not being recorded in front of a live audience. That will likely return next week on Discord. Now, why did yours truly pull back on videos for Wednesdays? Let me make this clear. Mondays, Saturdays, Sundays, some pay-per-views, that will still have video. Not everything is going away. And for Wednesdays is a little bit different for a few reasons. Number one, I have a full-time office that I have to run every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., 6 p.m., 4 p.m., 7 p.m., depends on what's going on, how much turmoil there is. Gets very difficult during the week to stay up until the wee hours in the morning doing video, preparing, doing a lot of things, and, you know, getting very little sleep. And then, especially with YouTube, you know, the dealing with algorithms, clickbait, fake news, it's very frustrating for yours truly. You know, what a lot of you may not realize, some of you do, is whether you're watching a podcast or a show or a clip of somebody putting on makeup or somebody doing a food review or somebody doing some news broadcast or an opinion piece or pro wrestling, you will usually hear the same three words on everybody's programs: like, share, subscribe. Because YouTube does have these algorithms that the more people are interactive, the more likely they are going to recommend your shows to other people. And when you have others who are putting blatant clickbait and getting those clicks and getting those views, even if people disconnect within a minute, it still causes YouTube to showcase their programming everywhere. And that's something that does not happen. You know, I can't force people to be interactive. You know, I always try to downplay it. Like, I'll just lift my finger up and say, hey, if you enjoy the show, you know what to do. And I put a thumbs up, you know, and there's only so much you could do. So the idea of staying up into the wee hours in the morning on Wednesdays, when, you know, Tuesday night, you know, I don't get the best of sleep. Friday starts the weekend. Monday nights are what they are. You know, you got to pull back a little bit. You know, I love doing the video side. I love people who, you could see my eyes, you could see my honesty, get animated, show video, show pictures. And look, when there is a particular specific reason that we need to show photos and videos of stuff for a Wednesday, I will do video. I will always keep you updated. I am not going to close my social medias down, even though the toxic atmosphere is out there. But I will always, at minimum, post announcements. Now, not doing this show live today is a little bit of an advantage because right now I'm sitting here shirtless. So you can't see my chubby little titties. So I'm vegging a little bit. My wife is visiting her family, so I am here by myself. And actually, some of what you are tuning into right now is being recorded a couple of hours before AEW Dynamite. Now, by the time this episode is over, we covered Dynamite. I will splice and dice and put things together. But I wanted to get a little bit of a head start, get into a couple of news tidbits, let you know going forward as far as what's going to happen with Wednesdays. Now, I will let everybody know on YouTube right now in the community section, there is a link if you want to join our Discord channel. And next Wednesday, I will do a live recording of Wednesday Night Dynamite. If we have to do video for a specific reason, then I will make that announcement and we'll do video. But as far as the YouTube side of it with Wednesdays, yeah, that's going to be put on the back burner for a little while. So we got a lot of stuff to get into today. And before we get into some news, I got to give a personal congratulations to somebody out there. I know a lot of you know who Will Washington is of Fightful. Now, Will Washington, you know, we don't cross paths all that much, but, you know, he knows I support everything that he does. And, you know, he left Fightful earlier this week. It was actually late last week. And on his final Day After Dynamite episode, I posted a comment a week ago. And what I wrote was the following. I wrote, over the years, and anybody out there that this applies to in the news and the podcasting world, believe me, I mean this towards some of you as well, the first part of it. But what I said was, over the years, I've managed to say some snarky things on my shows about many wrestling journalists and podcasters. Many years later, I look back at those times with regret and have organically replaced my ignorance with respect. But that's not the case with Will. How could you say anything bad about the guy? Will Washington always came across to me as one of the nicest, smartest, sincere ones out there. Spend 15 minutes watching or listening to him, and you will quickly agree. I appreciate everything Will has done and wish Will nothing but the best with what he does in the future. I posted that a week ago. Tonight, it was made public to the wrestling world that Will Washington has joined AEW. He will be their wrestling administration coordinator. He will be, I don't want to say a jack of all trades, but he will be heavily involved with the social media aspect of AEW, creative, public relations, live events. You know, he is going to put his input and his spin on a lot of things. And there's no denying, if you know who Will Washington is, you know, either you love the guy or you're jealous of the guy. And believe it or not, you know, I posted earlier on Twitter, I wrote, well, there's a Will, there's a way, and congratulating him. And right away, within a minute, you get some snarky wise ass, you know, that has to like throw his two cents in, like, oh, you know, hiring shills. Yeah, Will Washington is not a shill. He's a good man, good family man, and I wish him nothing but the best. See, for those out there that don't know who he is, you know, cracking jokes and insults actually just makes you look like a goof, to be honest with you. Sorry, gotta tell it like it is. That's what we do. All right, we have some interesting stuff to get into. Now, yesterday, Tuesday, we did the Q&A with Don Tony episode. I want to thank all my YouTube channel members for sending in questions for that. We also did Patreon, the VI Patreon episode, and we decided to make it available for everybody. A big supersize combo show. So that's online for everyone. Now, during that show, there were two topics that I touched on briefly that we obviously have to get into over here. First of all, it has to do with AEW's presale. And a little bit later, you know, we talk about Tessa Blanchard joining XPW. Yeah, I have some interesting things to say about that. But yesterday, AEW's presale for All In went on sale for Wembley, and it sold 35,000 tickets. And that is fucking awesome. Today, 24 hours later, that number has increased from 35,000 to 46,000. You know, why people have to just get angry, whether in favor of AEW or against AEW, is mind-boggling for yours truly. I watched AEW haters yesterday literally praying and hoping that the pre-sale would be disappointing. I see on the flip side some whack jobs out there that are like rubbing it in WWE fans' faces of what is going on, and, you know, like spiking the football and like, yeah, fuck you, WWE. We sold all these tickets and all this other stuff. And I'm like, what happened to just enjoying, celebrating, you know, seeing? And listen, I do bring up ECW for reasons that a lot of people out there would not understand unless you're old like me, unless you were into a ECW in 1996 or 1997, you know. And I got to bring it up here because it is so similar to what is going on now at AEW, but at the same time, though, it is so different as far as the reaction, okay? I was a hardcore ECW fan. I had the pleasure of working, pushing tickets for them, and a little bit, you know, extra on the hotlines back then for the final year of their existence. And I'm honored. Loved it. So I saw firsthand how important it was for us as ECW fans, you know, to want to see the product succeed. Being a fan on the outside looking in the mid-90s, you know, hoping that they would get on pay-per-view because you wanted to see your favorite product grow and expand. And when it reached pay-per-view, you know, I remember that night in the ECW arena and people crying. You know, people shouting out Tony Lewis, Uriel with the bus trips, and Tony Lewis doing Strictly ECW and thanking the wrestlers, and Paul Heyman thanking the fans. And you know what was missing there? You didn't have the fans cursing out WWF fans, WCW fans. They were just happy that the island of misfit toys, you know, the promotion that everybody out on the outside labeled it as hardcore garbage and ignored when you had pro wrestling at its finest with early Rey Mysterio and early Eddie Guerrero and Tajiri and Psicosis, and, you know, you could go on and on and on, RVD, Jerry Lynn. You know, there was so much more to ECW than what it was. And now you fast forward, you know, 26 years later, from 1997 to 2023, and AEW sells 46,000 tickets in 24 hours for a Wembley show. And it's a reason to, like, throw it in the faces of WWE fans. And Tony Khan on Tuesday got into a Twitter spat with somebody from ESPN by the name of Mike Coppinger. Now, Mike Coppinger, I never heard of before. He's obviously not an AEW fan, and I think he actually was an asshole to throw a little jab at AEW. So I don't blame Tony Khan for getting angry to an extent, but, you know, there's a problem with Tony Khan as well that we have addressed before. And yesterday was my breaking point as far as how I handle Tony Khan going forward and the internet wrestling community. I'll explain why. I tweeted and deleted yesterday, something that I don't like to do, but I did. When AEW hit 35,000 pre-sales on Tuesday, Mike Coppinger goes on Twitter and writes, and I quote, "Hearing Wembley is scaled for only 40,000 for AEW, a far cry from last April when I was ringside for Tyson Fury versus Dillian White, and it was packed to the brim with 94,000. Nothing beats the big fight feel at Wembley." Why this guy wrote that, I don't get. Tony Khan responds back, and I don't blame him to be mad, but he had to take it one step further. Tony Khan's response to this idiot was, "Lies. What a load of crap. Tell your agent, Nick Khan, to shove it up his ass." The Nick Khan part of it is where I have a problem with. Tony Khan continues and says, "Since you carry the credentials of a credible reporter and represent the worldwide leader, I'm just curious. Who is your source for this? How can a reporter representing ESPN tweet something about a legit news story that's so blatantly wrong and easily verified as falsehood?" Now, Tony Khan is talking about the seating arrangement. Remember last week's show? We did video. We threw out and called it bullshit that seating arrangement chart that a lot of wrestling news journalists were passing around, that AEW is being set up for 40,000. And the whole side of the seating was blacked out. And it was bullshit. Remember I said there was nothing on Ticketmaster or anywhere else to verify this. And it ended up being bullshit. But again, when you see why I'm changing how some of my shows are being recorded, again, you have to deal with all of these people that will post the opposite just to get the click, just to get, and, you know, it hurts the shows. It hurts the shows. Audio only, it's different. You know, you can't clickbait, really, on iTunes or Spotify. You know, it's much different. That's why you see on the audio side our numbers going up very nicely. You know, so I want to be a nice balance, but at the same time, though, you got to maximize your work. You don't want to, you know, just talk and nobody, you know, really pays attention because it's being showered by bullshit. So Tony Khan had every right to be mad at this ESPN guy, but he goes ahead and takes it one step further and he says, tell your agent Nick Khan to shove it up his ass. Now, I know Tony Khan is still mad at Nick Khan for calling him a kid and everything like that, but I went on Twitter yesterday and I wrote to Tony Khan and I said, the best thing you could do for AEW is to pretend WWE doesn't exist. Because what Tony Khan has succeeded in doing the last couple of years, and a lot of other people have done as well, is they've made it cool and made it fun to bash your competitor. The problem is, when it bled into fans, WWE fans, fans that maybe don't like AEW, you know, that's where it became a problem. And when fans would be targeted in a gang mentality, and you see what goes on online, nobody from AEW ever dared to step up and say, listen, guys, you know, thank you for supporting us, but, you know, going after fans is not the way to go. Nobody ever did that. So now, a couple of years later, it is fun and it is cool to bash anything that is a competitor of yours. Not just the Nick Khan, not just the Vince. I wrote that. And I got thrown in my face, like, look at this old man. Somebody who was around with ECW when Shane Douglas used to call out Shawn Michaels, when he used to call out Vince McMahon, when Paul Heyman used to call out Vince. Look at this guy who lived through the Attitude Era when Vince McMahon went after Bob Costas. First of all, when Vince went after Bob Costas and went on those tirades, we were very embarrassed. I was doing my hotline at that time. We thought that was roid rage. That was roid rage. That's not anything that fans were happy about. But here is where so many people get it wrong in 2023. Shane Douglas definitely called out Ric Flair, Dick Flair, Shawn Michaels. Paul Heyman would call out WCW, WWE, WWF at the time. DX called out WCW. What is missing? They didn't go after fans. And the WWE fans didn't go after the fans. The ECW fans never went after fans. How many times did I tell you all stories that when I used to go to ECW events in 1994, 1995, going to Philly, and then you wear, you know, your local shirts and stuff, your colors, not to pick fights, and you show up in the building, hey, look, it's the New Yorkers. Hey, Anthony, Prince Spaghetti Day. But early on, the difference was ECW Arena may smelled like armpits and rotten cheese because a lot of people didn't shower and that place used to be fucking 100 degrees in there. But what would happen if you were a WWF fan or you were a New Yorker showing up in Philly? 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, everybody there would be, hey, take your shoes off. Take a dip in the pool. The water's warm. Come hang out. Have a beer. Enjoy yourself. When I was pushing tickets for ECW the last year they were in existence, and I got to sit front row and I sat next to Straw Guy and everybody else, they treated everybody with respect, fans. That is something that is happening now that did not happen back in the day. Look at those DX skits once again. When they were around WCW fans, they were having fun. They didn't call them out on social media and gang up on them and say, what are you fucking retarded? How could you fucking like that shit? You don't like AEW? What the fuck is wrong with you? And that's where I draw the line with Tony Khan. They've made it cool to go after anybody who is not an AEW fan. And right away, you know, I just deleted what I wrote. And why? I talked about it yesterday on Patreon. I had a 45-minute online conversation with somebody who used to work in ECW. And, you know, this person, you know, I'm friends with. He follows me. I follow him. And he DM'd me. He's like, "Ant, just delete what you wrote. You're not going to change anybody's minds online. You're only going to provoke people who are going to take shots at you. There's nothing you could say or do that is going to make anybody. People are set in their ways. They enjoy this. Just keep it on your shows." And I deleted what I wrote. And I said, "That's it. That's it. My days of offering criticism or clearing up BS on social media are done. I'll keep it on the shows." So I am beyond ecstatic for AEW to pre-sale 46,000 and counting, because the wrestlers there are going to get their Wembley moment. Now, this is not the same Wembley Stadium from 1992. A lot of people don't know that. The old Wembley Stadium closed up in 2000, and I think 2007 when the new Wembley Stadium was launched, but just like Madison Square Garden here in New York. Today's Madison Square Garden is not the same Madison Square Garden from the 70s or the 80s. It is much different. So, but it's still the Garden, and this is still Wembley. I am happy for all of the wrestlers that are going to be able to perform in front of 70, 80, 90,000 fans, who knows. I am happy for UK fans that don't normally get American wrestling in their country live, up close, and personal. That's why I made such a big deal Monday about France. And if I'm WWE, you go back there as quickly as you can. Premium live event. If you're AEW, you take note and you get your ass to Paris, France. Because this is a one, this is something that fans are going to be able to talk about 20 years from now. Wrestlers who were there are going to talk about it 20 years from now. And this is a good thing. It's not about pro AEW and anti WWE. It shouldn't be negative or positive. It should just be, you know what, it's just pretty fucking cool. It's a cool thing to see that wrestling fans are still into wrestling as much as they are in 2023. And, you know, it's awesome to see what AEW has done in the last 24 hours. Look, a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the Rihanna concert and the way everything was set up, you know, I said at that time, I truly believe that AEW will draw anywhere from 55,000 to 75,000. Yes, some tickets will be comped. Yes, some tickets will be owned by scalpers who are going to demand too much money and they're going to get stuck with them the day of the event. But that's a microscopic percentage of the overall numbers. This is a great thing for pro wrestling. It is a positive thing. Yes, this is not the United States, and AEW is not going to draw that kind of number at any near future in the United States, unless they do something with Punk and the Elite or Jericho or others. And by the way, a little news tidbit. I know we're going a little bit of out of place, but since we're talking about All In, I'll throw this out there right now. Chris Statlander is, I don't want to say nearing a return, but she is nearing a return. She tore ACL in August of 2022, and she has been on the mend. She has been touring with AEW for the last 2 months. Yesterday, if you haven't seen it yet, it's worth checking it out. Any of you out there know, you know, like the president's race that they do before the Washington Nationals games, you know, when the presidents all run, you know, like around the ballpark, you know, the side of the ballpark. And then usually like some president, you know, ends up like in the lead, but falls at the last minute, or somebody trips them up, or something always goes wrong for some presidents. Yesterday, AEW was at the Washington Nationals game. And I think Wheeler Yuta put one of the presidents through a table. I think Orange Cassidy interrupted George Washington from winning the race. Funny, funny shit, man. Chris Statlander was there as well. Chris Statlander, you know, they are keeping it uber secret as far as how close she is to returning. But The good news is everything is on track for her to return soon. And right now, Chris Statlander is the front runner to face Jade Cargill at AEW All In. Now, you know, will that happen? Hey, I don't know. I don't work behind the scenes. But, you know, I think people are starting to realize that Jade Cargill, you know, the undefeated streak, impressive, you know, to showcase Jade Cargill, you know, as big and important as she possibly could be. But now, you know, we're getting into territory where Jade Cargill's been around for 3 years. And a lot of people feel like 55 matches across 3 years is not enough. And she's done Dark. She's done, you know, others. But it just feels like she should not be labeled almost like an attraction at this early in the game. Plus, you see, you know, this the match with Taya Valkyrie last week, I watched it again, and I realized how rough it was. You know, I mean, I'm a little bit easygoing with young wrestlers, you know, botching things here and there because, you know, you try to improve. That match did not work out very well. And Jade Cargill at this, you know, stage of the game, and I don't like comparing her to other young wrestlers, but you look at how far Tiffany Stratton has gone in a year. You look at how far Sol Ruka has gone in 6 months. You look at other women out there. I mean, Britt Baker, you know, you go back to, what, 2021? And you see, you know, in a 6 to 8 month period, how different and how crisp her work got put together because she put in a lot of time. I'm not saying that Jade Cargill doesn't put in the time. Hell, I said this yesterday. For all we know, Jade Cargill maybe wants to be a part-time wrestler. Maybe, you know, there is a little bit more of a balance of, home, you know, home being home with her kid and private life, and wrestling is part-time. You know, that could very well be the case. But at this stage in the game, they're running out of pertinent people for Jade to feud with, let alone face. Now you got the Taya Valkyrie thing done, and that kind of ended like a wet fart. So, you know, people like, oh, bring in Trinity, bring in Mercedes. And then what do you do with Jade Cargill? If she loses to one of them, then what do you do? You know, like, you can't start her at the bottom. There isn't a plethora of women that she could still feud with that people would find very, very interesting. And it's sooner or later you're going to run out of people who you could sign and make them elite. And in the wrestling world out there, there's a lot more men of value in wrestling than women. You know, you got your Camilles, you got your others. Well, Tessa Blanchard, I don't know, man. I think Tessa Blanchard, we'll get into her in a moment. But Jade Cargill, you know, this winning streak is going to come to an end, I think, in 2023. You know, it was good to start off the gate like, you know, like they did with Goldberg. I mean, obviously, their careers are not the same. Their in-ring work is not the same. The difference is, if Chris Statlander were to defeat Jade Cargill in a good match, there is nothing lost in Jade Cargill's defeat. Everybody's going to lose sooner or later. Not Andre the Giant. Even Andre the Giant lost in his 70s when everybody else thought, you know, he was undefeated. Jade losing to Chris Statlander is a very strong possibility. I think Chris Statlander dethroning Jade Cargill as the women's champion is a very strong possibility. She's the front runner to face Jade at All In. And her defeating Jade at All In, I got news for you. I know this sounds ridiculous, just like it sounded ridiculous when I said it the night of Austin Theory losing his briefcase. The night he lost his briefcase, the show is there. Go back and check it out. I said, this is the greatest thing that could have happened to Austin Theory right now, because that storyline with the briefcase is no longer attached to him. Now we could focus on Austin Theory and not a fucking prop and not a, when is he going to cash in this and that. And everybody else was like, oh, it's a disaster. How could you drop the briefcase? What an awful way to do it. It was the best thing that could have happened to Austin Theory. And look back on it, and I think everybody agrees with that. I think Jade Cargill losing a match in that championship would be a very good thing for Jade Cargill. Because you see the holes that are still out there, and wrestlers could wrestle for 20 years and have holes that could be exposed. But Jade Cargill, bring her down to earth a little bit, will definitely make what she does a little bit more palatable. So we'll see what happens. But Chris Statlander, everyone should start putting her on the radar. And who knows, you know, in a little bit, this show will be paused. You'll have no idea when. Well, you will when we talk about Dynamite, because, you know, Dynamite hasn't started yet tonight, but we will cover it because the second half of what I record will be Dynamite. Who knows? Maybe Chris Statlander returns tonight. I don't know. All right. So, you know, since we brought up Tessa Blanchard, let me just throw it out there right now. Tessa Blanchard has signed a multi-event deal with XPW. She will be appearing Saturday, May 27th in Newark, New Jersey at the Hart Ballroom for XPW. Now, if you go check out the ticket sales, it's kind of depressing, to be honest with you. I mean, I understand why the ticket sales are not very strong, but just so everybody knows, the building that they're having this show in is only being set up for 120 seats plus balcony seating. You could go look and see, very, very intimate setup, but the prices for the tickets reflect it. If you want to sit in the balcony, it's going to cost you $50 to $55 plus a fee. If you want to sit in one of the two rows, well, first row is sold out. Second row is still available. Those tickets are $80. Now, when I was working, doing stuff for XPW and doing their bus trips, and you know, I got to be honest with you, and people will back me up on this, my bus trips had more people on them than what XPW is going to draw at these events. How sad is that? But back then, those tickets with the bus trip, I think it was $55 with the bus trip. And I'm the one that revolutionized having wrestlers on the bus doing Q&As and photo ops. You know, everybody thinks, and I'm not throwing shade at Mike Johnson right now. My days of throwing shade at him are pretty much over. But everybody thinks Mike Johnson, you know, did that with Ring of Honor and stuff like that. No, no, yours truly was doing that with XPW before anyone else was doing it. But, you know, you look at the setup here, Tessa Blanchard being announced, and if you go on their website right now for tickets, they have sold a total of 67 tickets. I mean, Tessa Blanchard, a couple of years ago, was considered in the top three of the top women in wrestling. You want to say top five? I don't think that's an exaggeration. Tessa Blanchard, one of the top women in wrestling, obviously severely damaged because of the accusations made by La Rosa Negra, and others have backed her up. Others have defended Tessa Blanchard. Me, I've always said this for the last year, and I'll continue saying it. You know, we'll never know if Tessa said it or not. But even if she did, you know, if she has grown, if she has shown everyone that, hey, you know, people make mistakes and, you know, she's grown and learned by it and she realized how much she hurt people's feelings, you know, we should be a society where we give someone a second chance. The problem with Tessa Blanchard is similar to Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan had the incident where he was caught on camera using the N-word. He cried on TV and everything like that. And I remember when he went on social media that he, you know, he wants to, you know, just show everyone that he is a changed person and that's not him and this and that. I've told you all this story. I wrote a 3-page letter to him. Got very, very raw and emotional, especially bringing up my grandmother, who adored Hulk Hogan, maybe even more than her own children. And she, my grandmother's the one that got me into wrestling as a kid. And I had someone get in touch with Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart gave that letter to Hulk. I know he did. And never got a reply. Not even, and did I expect one? No, but, you know, when he was asking everyone to give him a second chance, and I used to really bash him, and in my letter, like I said, I don't want to read what I wrote. I still have a copy saved. But, you know, I bashed the crap out of Hogan. I was a Hulkamaniac as a kid. I brought up some of the things that I bought over the years back then. And you don't, you know, earn people's respect by buying stuff. But the point is that I showed how much Hulkamania meant to me and how disappointed I was. And that's probably why I went so vicious on him when we were doing the shows back then with the Minority Report and early Don Tony Kevin Castle. But, you know, I was willing to give him a second chance. And I asked for the same back and didn't even open the letter. So it's like, okay, I always felt the reason why Hulk Hogan, and if you want a good example of it, there's a great example right now on Twitter right now. Go to WWE Shops Twitter. Right now, they just put up for sale today, May 3rd, a bunch of Hulk Hogan autographed items. And some of them look pretty cool. Look at the comment section. Every comment is negative towards Hulk Hogan. I couldn't find one. Hulk Hogan, when this happened, and I've said this for years now, his mistake was him apologizing, crying on camera, but never went and did like little speaking events and try to, you know, show others that, hey, I made a mistake, but, you know, you got to be better and this and that. Hulk Hogan never made those appearances at schools or anything else. And believe me, I know some people would be like, oh, that sounds ridiculous. No, no, no. Wrestlers showing up at schools has been something that's been going on for decades and decades, doing speeches, be a star, this and that. And Hulk never showed up, even in minority schools, because he didn't want to deal with people maybe getting into his face, not physically, but basically confronting him and telling him how fucked up what he did. He did, you know, how fucked up it was. He never took that extra effort. And with Tessa Blanchard, with all due respect to Tessa Blanchard, in the last couple of years, she has done nothing publicly to, you know, overall to just show that even if she did say it, that this is not, you know, her at the core inside. It's almost like I didn't say it. So why the fuck do I have to defend myself? And why do I have to fucking do it? You know, just being a regular person, being a friendly person, you know, just mingling, socializing online. You don't have to respond to everybody's comment, but, you know, being friendly. And, you know, she just did not do anywhere near what she should have. And now she is kind of like an outcast. You know, and XPW, look, I wish the XPW of 2023 felt like the XPW of 2002. Obviously, you can't have the same wrestlers because of age and, you know, some who have passed away and some who are just physically unable. But the core of XPW, believe me, when it came to the Northeast, I know this sounds ridiculous to a lot of people out there, but I saw it with my own eyes and I'll never forget it. You know, and Rob Black's wife, Lizzie Borden, it was her birthday. And I remember being in the ECW arena, and they sent me and Slash and someone else to go to, I don't remember if it was Carvel, or go to a bakery in the bitter cold to buy her a cake, you know, for her birthday. And in the ECW arena, the night before of an event, everybody, you know, like hid inside the arena, and they put the cake there, and people came out, wished her happy birthday, and she was in tears. And, it, you know, when you see that, you know, you say to yourself, you know, okay, you know, maybe some of these people are really labeled questionable, you know, from the outside looking in, but you saw just regular people, regular humans just having, you know, a really nice time. And it was really, really nice to see. It was cool to be part of it. And that vibe was pretty cool. You know, the vibe amongst all the guys, you know, hanging out in the hotel rooms and this and that, you know, people just having a good time. You didn't have, you know, what you have now. And XPW now, when you know, I'm not saying that Drake Younger shouldn't get an opportunity somewhere, but you see some of the way that they're portraying XPW, and then you see the incident with that guy and the syringe not too long ago. It's like, all right, XPW paid a decent amount of money to bring Tessa in to create controversy, create a buzz. And even with that, they have sold 67 tickets. And that's sad because Tessa Blanchard should have been back on television by now. The years are going by. She's not getting any younger. And the idea that the best that she could do at the present time is book a couple events for XPW, it's just, it's disappointing. Not necessarily as much of a shot on XPW, but you're like, Jesus. You know, I don't like these dark side of the ring things. You know, if you want to talk about, you know, tragedies, or if you want to bring up tragedies and how people have overcome, that's fine. You know, but some of them are very, 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 very one-sided when they shouldn't be. I don't like it, but I tell you, you know, the way things have gone so far, I mean, if somebody did a, you know, like something about Tessa Blanchard, talk about someone who's had such a ceiling of potential, and it feels like it is just being wasted. You know, 1 year turns into 3 years, 3 years turn into 5 years. And I just can't believe that she would be content as far as wrestling goes to be in this situation. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, and isn't she now broken up with her husband? You know, I don't really get into, like, personal relationship stuff, but they made it public not too long. I think they split up too. So, hey, maybe that split up, maybe wrestling will be her new love. You know, her old, what is old is new again. So we'll see what happens. Hey, look, I'm just expressing opinions, everyone. Some people may think I'm spot on. Some people may think I'm ridiculous. Remember the phrase I always say, haven't said it much lately, but not everyone who is old is wise, and not everyone who is wise is old. You know, I hope that some people believe that I have a little bit of smarts to me and being a little bit real with convo. And, yeah, maybe Tessa Blanchard, maybe this is the time where, you know, after, I think the XPW stuff might end up being her rock bottom. I mean, you know, what she did to Rosa Negra, if that's true, is definitely some rock bottom. But, man, talk about someone who could have definitely turned this upside down and turned it into a major positive, and she's totally, totally neglected it. So, some quick NXT news. Isla Dawn and Alba Fire are still your women's tag team champions. They defeated Katana Chance and Kayden Carter to retain those championships. A lot of people are still confused what's going to happen with those titles. They will still appear doing stuff at NXT. They are SmackDown wrestlers. They still possess the NXT Women's Tag Team Championships. You know, I know those of you who tuned in to Monday's show, a lot of what I'm about to say, you already heard. But, you know, when I'm still asked questions like this, that's when I'm like, oh, so you didn't tune into Monday, or you didn't tune into Wednesday. The reason why Brock Lesnar is a free agent is because when they need Brock Lesnar to do a SmackDown show, to maybe get a little bit extra ticket sales, whether it's a dark match or it's on camera, you know, when they want to do something where Omos gets a little bit of extra work, that's why they're doing some free agent stuff. With Von Wagner, they are undecided which brand they should bring him to. So they have the free agent so he can appear on a Raw and compete on a SmackDown, get a little bit extra work. Isla Dawn and Alba Fire, they are still new as a tag team together. And Alba Fire, you know, is still, you know, adapting as a tag team wrestler. I mean, as a singles wrestler, she was good, but a lot of people will agree. If you watch on a regular basis in NXT, she was not main roster ready. There was a lot of flaws that were very visible, a lot of timing issues. That's all disappeared with her and Alba Fire. They are great as a tag team, but, you know, they're not going to get exposure every single week on TV. You know, SmackDown is only 2 hours. They're not the WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. They are NXT's Women's Tag Team Champions. They would be featured on television, absolutely. But they're keeping the titles on them a little bit longer so they can get a little extra work. That's why they're still with champions. Indi Hartwell was supposed to be the same thing. Now, if you remember Indi Hartwell with the leg injury last week, if you remember my Wednesday Night Dynamite last week, I said that it looked like she escaped serious injury, but if you remember last week, I said WWE sent her to get an MRI just in case. And guess what? The MRI came back that she definitely suffered an injury. Now, I don't know if it's a tear. I heard it was a small tear, but she cannot compete anytime soon. She is in a boot. She can move around, but she cannot defend that women's championship. She just got drafted to the main roster. And the idea originally was for her to remain champion, get a little bit of extra work, because on the main roster, we're probably going to see more skits with her and Dexter Lumis and Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae than anything else. But now with her injury, she can't even wrestle on the main roster. If she wouldn't have been injured, she would have been able to work a little bit of NXT while getting acclimated on the main roster. But now with her having this injury, she was forced to relinquish the NXT Women's Championship. They announced on NXT that there will be a tournament to crown a new women's champion, and that person will be crowned at NXT Battleground, which is coming up, you know, soon. Isn't it the same? I think it's the same night as AEW Double or Nothing. So they actually, same night, we're going to get this. Now, you know, early buzz, I know a lot of people think Tiffany Stratton, it's her time, and I'm with you. Tiffany Stratton will be NXT Women's Champion soon. But I'm also hearing that Cora Jade might be the one to end up getting this. We'll see. We'll see. Right now, you got Carmelo Hayes as the NXT champion, and they are pushing him more into babyface territory. Trick Williams yesterday fucking killed it in NXT. People are starting to, you know, a lot of people tune into Wednesday Night Dynamite that don't watch NXT. But I'm getting more and more DMs and emails from people out there that are like, hey, DT, I don't watch NXT that often, but you're always high on Trick Williams, and now I see what you're talking about. Trick Williams has it. That guy is going to be a star in the main roster. When I said for the last couple of months that Grayson Waller is going to leapfrog Carmelo Hayes and Bron Breakker to the main roster, you know, you could see it. You know, some people don't like, you know, the WWE, you know, entertainer, sports entertainer, you know, but you see some wrestlers and you just close your eyes and you envision them on the main roster and it just clicks. It just works. There are some people that you just scratch your head and you're like, I can't see this person on the main roster. Grayson Waller just has it. And now you see what's happening. JD McDonagh, man, I am really curious to see what's going to happen with JD McDonagh on Raw. You know, a lot of people think that he should be a babyface. Absolutely not. Right now, it's emotional. You know, right now, it's appreciation, and, you know, he is not hidden amongst his fellow wrestlers in NXT and the fans. And that's awesome. You can be real. You could be real and be a heel. You just can't do that every single week. But for the time being, JD McDonagh showing a little bit of who he truly is, it's a pretty cool thing to see. But at the end of the day, man, give me a JD McDonagh versus Finn Balor match. Yeah, I know JD McDonagh kind of reminds us of Finn Balor a little bit, but I would really like to see that go down. The problem is, how do you do that if they're both heels? And I don't know, for some reason, I just look at JD McDonagh, and he's a guy that you just want to smack. And I say that with love, you know? By the way, JD McDonagh beat Dragon Lee on NXT, and they tore it up. They freaking tore it up. Definitely worthy of an NXT takeover from past. That's how good this match was. Now, let's also be honest. With the exception of the women's tag team titles, every other match was about 3 minutes. Drew Gulak and Wesley actually went a few minutes longer, but everything else was about 3 minutes. JC Jane over Gigi Dolan was 3.5 minutes. JC Jane got busted open during the match. Axiom over Scripps. And remember when we had the conversation that WWE was, you know, pulling the script, that they were changing the script for Reggie, that it just wasn't working out? Well, yesterday it hit, you know, rock bottom. It hit critical mass, I guess you could call it. Axiom beat Scripps. After the match is over, Axiom shows a little sign of respect. Scripps doesn't accept it. Cheap shots Axiom. So Axiom decides, I'm going to pull his mask off. And, of course, he was revealed to be Reggie. So Scripps as Reggie is done. And I honestly think that's a good thing because this character has not been good. I look back, you know, at what he has done, and I am a little amazed that he's still on this roster. I mean, Scripps, they were trying to use more of his acrobatics, but I think people forgot the messages of destroying NXT and this and that. And, You know, it didn't work. It didn't work. So where Reggie goes from here, I don't know. You know, do I think he'll be released? I have no idea. There are going to be some releases coming up. You know, it's just the nature of the business, especially a publicly traded company that's about to merge with Endeavor. There's going to be some downsizing. I don't know if he is one of them, but obviously some major changes are going to be needed for Reggie. Joe Gacy over Joe Coffey, which a lot of people online were not happy with. Danny Palmer makes her debut, beating Tatum Paxley. And Wesley retains the North American Championship, defeating Drew Gulak. Now, something pretty cool. Yesterday on NXT, we saw the Dyad once again. And, you know, I'm going to keep the faith. I'm going to hold out hope that WWE and the Dyad, the Grizzled Young Veterans, work out a deal. Something, and you know what? Maybe I should DM a couple of people I'm friendly with in Florida to try to get this answer. You know, I'm starting to get this vibe that maybe they just want to go back to the UK. That it might not necessarily just be, hey, we didn't get, you know, we're not being graduated to the main roster and, you know, we're tired of it or this and that. I don't know if it's just that. You know, some people do get homesick and some people do get burned out. I was shocked that not only were the Dyad on NXT yesterday night, the 2nd of May, but they're going to fight Gallus next week for the tag titles. And could you imagine if they win on top of it? I don't know. I mean, but man, you know, they went public 2 weeks ago and revealed that WWE denied their release request. As far as PR goes, that is not a good thing to make public. You know, the Dyad have publicly basically said, we're just going to, you know, we're being forced to work out the rest of our contract till October, and we're excited to see what we could do in October. You know, that doesn't look good on WWE at all. But I wonder if there's something more to it. Now, obviously, only time will tell. But to see them yesterday was pretty cool. Them getting a tag title shot next week is pretty cool. I'm holding out hope that if it was strictly contract, that maybe WWE does work something out with them. We'll see. We'll see. Dijak versus Ilya Dragunov is also advertised for next week. So that's a pretty cool deal there as well. Their rating, they did, I believe, 568,000 viewers. That is down from last week's 647. Is that a disappointment? I think so. I mean, Carmelo Hayes has not killed it in the ratings, you know, since becoming champion. I think mid-fives to 600,000 might be WWE's new norm. You see the wrestlers that were graduated to the main roster. I mean, I just wonder if Mandy Rose is going to return. You know, that's something we've talked about a few times in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, once Endeavor merges with WWE, this is not as kid of a friendly product as you think. You know, Endeavor with UFC, their product is not targeted to families. And, you know, this is going to be a brand new entity. And overall, their product might be more directed. And look, we predicted it. You all predicted it as well. I mean, we figured that social media aspect and the Twitches and the live streams would be relaxed a little bit for the WWE stars because they're no longer, you know, under the WWE banner once this merger is complete, you know, the merger and acquisition. So, you know, getting a little bit extra revenue live streaming Endeavor is not as strict as WWE was. So now you hear that some wrestlers are now going to be able to live stream again and this and that. So I personally think Mandy Rose, she, if there was ever a chance of her returning, I know some people are like, no, hiring freeze, hiring freeze. Trust me, everyone. If WWE and Endeavor definitely like the idea of bringing someone in, they will. You know, there's no, WWE stock right now is at $108 a share. If you've seen anybody report that, I mean, you remember before Vince returned, the stock was in the 60s. Do you realize how many billions of dollars that man has made in the last 4 months? It is mind-boggling, you know, but nobody talks about that. So believe me, if bringing, but you want to know on the flip side though, did Mandy Rose, you know, out welcome, you know, like, should she return to NXT? Like, why should she be regulated just to NXT? Wouldn't you rather see Mandy Rose on the main roster and maybe someone else go into NXT from the main roster? I don't know. I don't know. I just don't want Mandy Rose to be brought back to NXT, become women's champion again. And then, you know, it's surprise and it's cool and it's everything. She's back and it's awesome. Then it sinks in a week later and you're like, wait a minute. You know, why is she just on NXT? Like, she should be graduating even further. So I think it may come down to Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade as far as who the next champion is going to be. I have a feeling that they're going to take, you know, a little bit more time with Tiffany Stratton before giving her the championship. But, hey, if they did give her the championship right now, I don't think many people would really have a problem with it. So we'll see what happens. Now, some news as far as AEW goes. AEW Dark and AEW Elevation, those shows are done for the time being. They will no longer be featured on YouTube. Got to give credit to Andrew Zarian for this one. Because of AEW's deal with Warner Brothers Discovery and the new show that's coming Saturdays, AEW Collision, all AEW programming is going to be solely exclusive to Warner Brothers Discovery, the WBD. So no more of the YouTube programming. Now, Ring of Honor is not part of this. And I'm going to go a completely different route here for everybody. I think Ring of Honor's future might be a little bit better now. A lot of people are afraid that Ring of Honor might end up, you know, being fallen victim to all of this. And I'll tell you why I'm not so sure. You know, this weekend coming up, they're doing shows. They're doing tapings in Orlando, Florida, once again. And, you know, the reason why people are, and I'm not just talking about just regular, you know, wrestling fans. I don't want to label you like regular people. But I mean, like, journalists and podcasters are also fearing this because Ring of Honor has been taped. A lot of their matches have been taped at some of these tapings. And now with Collision, you know, the way the rosters are going to be handled is going to be a lot different now, especially that they're not taping Dark or Elevation anymore. So people think, oh, Ring of Honor is going to suffer as a result. I think it might be the opposite, guys. I honestly think that if Ring of Honor is the only product that is not going to be in the hands of Warner Brothers Discovery, Tony Khan could continue to keep that totally separate. Have the tapings in Orlando, tape for Honor Club. Understand, you have people committed to Honor Club. It's not just monthly memberships, it's yearly memberships. So Tony Khan has got to be committed. You know, I mean, this might have felt like a whim and a spur of the moment decision for some of his, you know, the way he has gone forward with Ring of Honor. But, you know, when you make these deals and you set up Honor Club and you start doing memberships and you start doing this, you know, you understand you have to be committed to this for the long term. I don't see Tony Khan just eventually closing down the Ring of Honor banner in a couple of months. I don't care how big this deal is with Collision. We don't even know what the ratings are going to look like. Like I said before, the idea that there's going to be two totally different rosters on TV is almost ridiculous. Even if it starts out that way, you're going to have champions that are going to have to appear on Dynamite and Collision. You know, I think at the end of the day, Collision might be to Dynamite as to what SmackDown is to Raw. Now, which show will be the flagship show? Well, it'll probably be Dynamite. You know, back in the day, Raw was the flagship show and SmackDown was the secondary show. There were little spurts when Paul Heyman was head of creative on SmackDown in the 2000s that we felt that SmackDown was the better show. But it was always perceived that Raw was the flagship show, SmackDown was the secondary show. Or even before SmackDown, it was Raw and I think it was Sunday Night Heat. So now when you look at AEW, it's two brands. It is Dynamite and Collision. You know, two shows, main shows. What you got to think about, too, is a lot of these younger stars got to get work. They got to get work. So there's going to be dark matches, but what are you going to do with them? Are they not going to be televised? That might be a good thing. Because, you know, house rules, you know, some of that footage went online, and we remember that match. What was it? Was it Anna Jay versus Britt Baker? I don't remember. I think that might have been the participants, and the match was not good. And, you know, I didn't make fun of it, and I didn't really talk about it all that much because, look, you know, at the end of it, you know what? It might have been Sky Blue. But whatever it is, you know, you're still dealing with, you know, Anna Jay, Sky Blue. They're still up and coming. You know, people think because they've been on TV for a few years that, you know, that's it. They're established and they are supposed to perform better. And, yeah, I get that to a certain extent. But as of right now, Dark and Elevation will no longer stream on YouTube. What happens in the future, we will see. But I expect that AEW Collision announcement to be happening very, very soon. How soon? Don't know. But it will be happening very, very soon. MLW, very quickly, I got, you know, the weeks wrong a couple of weeks ago, and I already apologize for that, but, you know, MLW right now is officially done with Reels, and Reels would like to work out something with MLW in the future, but there is a big problem here, and something interesting that I was told in an email over the weekend, that one of the things that MLW may have to consider, and I don't know if they will do this, but something that I even admit I didn't really think about all that much. I mean, we talked about the MLW lawsuit against WWE, but one thing that we never talked about was now with Reels being featured on Peacock, Reels is like caught in the middle as far as with regards to pro wrestling because MLW was featured on their network. So whenever MLW Underground was on Reels for the last bunch of weeks, Peacock on their channel, if you clicked on the Reels banner, you'd just get a black screen while MLW Underground was airing because Peacock is exclusive, WWE is exclusive to Peacock. No other wrestling programming can be featured on Peacock. So, yeah, you look at that side and you're like, hey, isn't that like a perfect reason why MLW is suing? Look, they can't even be seen on Peacock because of it. Yeah, I get it. But here's the thing that none of us thought about. MLW may have to, I don't want to say pull this lawsuit or withdraw this lawsuit, but MLW may have to come to a conclusion with this WWE lawsuit before Reels would consider really giving them any type of a deal, you know, even if it's in the wee hours in the morning on a weekend, because Reels worked out a big deal with Peacock. Reels is an independent cable channel. A lot of people don't know that. Their deal with Peacock is big, and their wrestling product on Reels is suing WWE, which is exclusive on Peacock. So Reels has shown a show that is run by people suing WWE. So this lawsuit may have to be closed and done with before Reels works out something substantial with MLW again. That's why I truthfully wonder if MLW will ever come back to Reels. You may see something once in a blue moon, but, you know, Reels, there's no denying it. People don't want to talk about it. They won't shoot it down as fake news. They just will ignore it. But Reels thought they were getting a much bigger number with MLW. Now, I'm not saying they were going to get, you know, like Rampage numbers, but they definitely expected triple digits, even if it's in the hundreds. Impact Wrestling is now starting to do the low hundreds, 120, 110. Still haven't gotten last week's rating. I don't know why. You know, nobody seems to have it. Didn't break the 150, which is weird, because that means they would had to have done under like 95, and I just don't see Impact Wrestling dropping that much so quickly. But now with Trinity coming on, Trinity will definitely garner some viewers. Some wacky people online saying that Trinity to Impact now might reflect like with Kurt Angle's debut in TNA back in the day. It's like, I didn't want to address that. It's, you look at the size of the companies, it's, oh, God, crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. This weekend, we'll talk a little bit more about Trinity because she finally opened up a little bit why she left WWE. And it's exactly what we all talked about last year, that Johnny Ace, John Laurinaitis, acting like a total asshole to her and Sasha Banks, basically telling them, shut up, do your job, you're getting paid, be happy, we'll do things whenever it, you know, it happens. And she felt very disrespected. So we'll get into that over the weekend. But, you know, just with Impact and with MLW, you know, Impact seems like they're on a nice momentum right now. Very, very happy for Impact. MLW, for the foreseeable future, for those that do follow programming, and some of you do, a lot of you have requested that I talk more about MLW. It's a shame that it has to be under these circumstances, but MLW will continue having programming, you know, online, you know, wherever you access their streaming services. I don't know if they're featured on Fight, but I know on YouTube they have some stuff, but they will be featured online. So, you know, definitely look out for their online content. You know, just for right now, MLW Underground will be on hiatus for the time being. So, you know, we got to give you a little bit of an update regarding the Britt Baker black eye shirt. It's amazing that it's only been a week since that shirt went on sale and so much controversy has risen because of it. I mean, look, common sense. You know, you and I know that it's a wrestling shirt. But as I said on the sit-down episode, and I put online like a three-minute clip on YouTube if you want to go check it out. I mean, it's simple. You walk down the street wearing that shirt, celebrating a woman sporting a black eye who looks very, very sad, and it's almost like a selfie. You know, are you really going to have time to explain to a total stranger why you're wearing that shirt and the origins of that shirt? If you wear it to a wrestling event, yeah, everybody in the building will know. But outside in public, probably not the smartest thing to do. And this shirt got a lot of controversy over the past week. Fox News sensationalizing it, focusing on the domestic violence aspect to it. Now, I actually received word that AEW is strongly considering pulling this shirt from the store. Not just yet. I mean, even though there's been a lot of backlash over this shirt, do not misconstrue it. AEW loves the publicity they got from it. And I know on the surface some of you may actually find that disturbing, but I'm actually going to defend AEW here. You know the origins of that black eye. I know the origins of that black eye. That is not domestic violence. It is perceived to be domestic violence, but it's not. And Jericho wearing that shirt tonight on Dynamite to further the feud between he and Adam Cole, and Adam Cole just getting angrier and angrier. I mean, it was a great thing to see. So there is a lot of buzz within AEW that they will be pulling that shirt. Just not yet. You know, this, that's Jericho wearing it tonight even more. Just a reason to further intensify that anger. You think in storyline, Adam Cole wants to see his significant other sporting a black eye on the shirt of somebody he's feuding with. It just pisses you off even more. So AEW is going to let it linger a little bit more, and then they'll, in many people's eyes, do the right thing and take it down. The only problem with that, and I think you all realize this online, there are so many bootleg shirt sites out there. There are so many bootleg clothing sites. And you go on any thread that AEW posts about this shirt, you will see somewhere embedded in that thread a bootleg store saying, oh, you could buy the shirt here. You could buy the shirt here. And they will put the shirt a couple of dollars cheaper than Pro Wrestling Tees, try to get you to buy it. And most of these stores are located outside the United States. So good luck on trying to shut down these stores. There are so many bootleg stores out there. And look, some of the wrestling shirts that I have are bootlegs. I can't tell you how many times somebody say to me, where did you get that shirt? Where did you get that shirt? In more cases than not, they're bootlegs. In fact, there is a shirt on sale right now that I want to get, that I will be getting. And when Cody Rhodes does finally get moved to SmackDown and feud with Roman Reigns, I will throw this shirt on. Now, I will be rooting for Cody to win, but this shirt features Roman Reigns, and it looks like he is standing inside a morgue, and he's looking down at a dead body. Now, you only see the feet of the dead body, but the tag around the toe says American Nightmare on it. It is such a cool looking shirt, and it's a bootleg. It's a bootleg. So believe me, I know not everybody out there likes counterfeit stuff, and maybe that's not the most cool thing to do, especially, you know, oh, you should be buying, you know, from the other. Listen, I go back to the days of iOffer.com. I can't tell you how much bootleg videos that I have, and I am so glad that I have it. You know, whether it's concerts where somebody sneaks in a camera or something like that. I mean, you'd be shocked at some of the great quality of some of these bootlegs. So, but again, as I said earlier, Jericho wearing that Britt Baker shirt on Dynamite tonight. Very ballsy. Very ballsy. Now, Britt Baker a little bit absent with the Jericho interaction. Like tonight on Dynamite, after the opening match, which was the tag team of Orange Cassidy, Bandido, Roderick Strong, and Adam Cole defeating the Jericho Appreciation Society. Chris Jericho was on commentary. Right after the match was over, Adam Cole storms down the rampway and tackles Chris Jericho, and they just have this massive brawl. Britt Baker not shown at all. Britt Baker not even coming out there. Like, I would have preferred to see Britt Baker, you know, get in Jericho's face, maybe even trying to hit him herself. I mean, there's an obvious reason why we didn't see Britt Baker, because she showed up later on in the night. But still, I think Britt Baker a little bit too absent in the last week with regards to the interaction with Adam Cole and Chris Jericho. It was very nice to see Roderick Strong back in the ring today. You know, let's also be honest that there was never a time that Roderick Strong could not go. I mean, outside of injury. You know, I saw some people on social media getting 2,000 likes today on Twitter because they write these smart-ass lines like, Roderick Strong returns to pro wrestling tonight for the first time since 2014. You know, it's like a shot to the WWE that Roderick Strong in NXT is not really pro wrestling. I mean, you know, it's little things like that. You look at someone like, how old are you? I mean, I understand why it's funny, it's catchy, but you know, there's little things like that. It's like they're like mosquitoes, you know, a little annoying. But Roderick Strong, again, never a time that he couldn't go, you know, but it was pretty obvious once the Undisputed Era was done in NXT, you know, Roddy just, it seemed a little bit out of place. And don't get me wrong, he helped the Diamond Mine. He did immense help and work for the Creed Brothers, Ivy Nile, Damon Kemp. Roderick Strong definitely was good for those guys, and he wasn't just with those people within NXT. He helped others as well. It's just that Roddy Strong is still a little bit too young to be a trainer, doesn't want to be a full-time trainer as of yet, and that's the reason why it was time for him to move on. And he looked good today in that match. Adam Cole with the boom, my man Joel Parker to win it, and then as I said, Adam Cole jumps Jericho at the commentator's table, brawls, sets up the match that should be made official next week for Double or Nothing between Jericho and Adam Cole. Saraya over Willow Nightingale, Ruby Soho and Toni Storm with a little bit of interference outside. Willow hits a Death Valley driver on Saraya, but Toni Storm with a distraction. That leads to Saraya hitting the good night. After the match is over, a little post-match beatdown. And then we had something interesting. Hikaru Shida shows up. And originally we think she's making a save for Willow. But remember, it was not too long ago that Hikaru Shida was healing it up. But I think we also forgot that when Saraya was forming the Outcasts and she was shunning Shida, remember that sit-down conversation where Shida's like looking around like, what the fuck, what about me? Remember, Shida was healing at that time, and Saraya was still a baby face. So when Shida comes out tonight, early on, we think she's making a save. Then she looks at the Outcast, and she's hugging them, and everybody's like, oh my God, why are you going to do that? Why are you joining them? But we forget that she was kind of the one that was healing it not too long ago, but it was all a ruse, because just when the Outcast think that they have Shida in their camp, here comes Jamie Hayter, here comes Britt Baker. They get the upper hand. Shida beating down the Outcasts, spray painting them. And that is a match that we will also likely see at Double or Nothing. Hikaru Shida, Britt Baker, and Jamie Hayter versus The Outcast, which, honestly, I don't know how I feel about that, only because, you know, I think Jamie Hayter having a one-on-one match for the women's championship might be, you know, the more preferable way to go. Double or Nothing happens in, what, about 3 weeks? So, you know, there's not too much time for a build for her to have an individual match. Who knows? Maybe they end up with the individual match. But you think Jade Cargill will obviously have a match at Double or Nothing. And this women's tag match in some capacity is going to have to happen. So are we really going to get three or four women's matches at Double or Nothing? I don't think so, to be honest with you. Little bit of confusion tonight. House of Black cut a promo. They are now doing what's called open house rules to anybody who wants to challenge them for the Trios titles. Any three wrestlers could form a team and challenge them. I know what you're thinking already. All right, a lot of lazy booking for AEW already. This sounds lazy. That means any three people could just team up at any time just to form a team for no reason at all. It may not be as bad as it sounds, guys. But a 20 count on the floor, which means that a lot of people could brawl outside the ring a little bit longer. They don't have to worry about being counted out. No rope breaks. Again, I listen, when Jim Cornette and Brian Last bring up this promo, I guarantee you will hear the term lazy booking at least three times. No rope breaks and optional disqualifications. Doesn't optional DQs happen in almost every AEW match? Seriously. I mean, I don't know. Because the House of Black, I don't know, just feels like something like the Gun Club would do. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know how I feel about this, especially after the Battle Royal that we had tonight. The Tres de Mayo, which means May 3rd, Trios Battle Royale. The Acclaimed Billy Gunn won it. Last eliminating the Butcher, the Blade, and Kip Sabian. And does this mean now that the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn are going to get a Trios championship match at Double or Nothing? The House of Black promo didn't really make it seem like whoever won the Battle Royale was going to get a title shot. I think we're all assuming that that's what's going to happen. So you probably could mark that match down for AEW. Double or Nothing, that Trios title match. The other teams that were involved in this Battle Royale tonight was Evil Uno, Alex Reynolds, and John Silver. QT Marshall, Aaron Solo, and Powerhouse Hobbs. The Varsity Athletes and Ari Davari. The Butcher, the Blade, and Kip Sabian. And the Lucha Bros and El Hijo del Vikingo. Which, you know, it was fun to see El Vikingo again, but I don't know. Something was very lacking with that match. Kenny Omega and Don Callis cutting a promo backstage talking about John Moxley's plan, you know, the plan against Moxley next week in a steel cage. Omega, that's good, Moxley. Omega, he says that Moxley may make them both bleed in the cage, but everything comes to an end next week. It does not. Obviously, we're all thinking about, you know, the massive Elite versus Bullet Club, you know, match that everybody's talking about for Double or Nothing. You know, in a week, we should have about five or six matches set, ready to go. Earlier, the Blackpool Combat Club cutting a promo. And I kind of like, you know, this idea that Bryan Danielson is taking the stance like, you know, we're not trying to hurt AEW. We're trying to make everybody better. You know, Moxley's like, we're not bullies. You know, we're trying to make everybody better. You know, when everybody gets better, it's better for AEW. They want AEW to succeed and be the best company out there. And the only way it's going to happen is if the Blackpool Combat Club elevates everybody. So very interesting way to go about it. Not bad. I'm not complaining about it at all. Some complaints tonight have to do with Christian Cage and Wardlow. I already know why. What's going down is going down, and I'll explain it to you in a minute. Wardlow had a squash match defeating someone by the name of Logan LaRue. After the match is over, Wardlow gets on a mic, calls out Christian Cage and Luchasaurus for an open challenge. Obviously, everybody thinks Luchasaurus versus Wardlow is the next feud, and they come out. But Christian Cage announces to everyone that the title shot doesn't belong to Luchasaurus. It belongs to Christian Cage. So everybody looks confused. Christian wants to take on Wardlow for the TNT Championship. And the reason why they're doing that, friends, is because they don't want Luchasaurus losing so quickly to Wardlow. And if he faces Wardlow right now, Wardlow is not losing to Luchasaurus. And they don't want to continue really doing this hot potato because, look, it did not benefit Powerhouse Hobbs at all. And people are still not feeling Wardlow's reign, which is a little unfair to Wardlow. But Christian Cage taking on Wardlow first eats up a couple of weeks. So once, and plus, Christian will lose to Wardlow, and Christian loses nothing with it. So once Christian loses, that's when Luchasaurus will attack Wardlow, and that should set up. So for people out there that are really getting overly dramatic about it, like, why are they going to Christian? That's ridiculous. The money match. Well, because they don't want to do it so soon. So that's the reason why they're doing that. Another match that a lot of people are not thrilled about that appears to be happening at Double or Nothing is Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal versus FTR for the AEW tag titles. We saw a little vignette of Sunjay, Jay Lethal, Jeff Jarrett, and Satnam Singh at Mark Briscoe's house in Delaware. Mark Briscoe is there. Kid is there. The father is there. And basically, you know, you got like Sunjay Dutt and Satnam Singh in overalls. And Jeff Jarrett's playing the guitar, doing a rendition of My Baby Tonight. And, you know, Daddy Briscoe, Briscoe Sr., is talking to Mark Briscoe. And, you know, he's like, I know you know Jay for a long time, but I don't trust those other two in them overalls. And Mark Briscoe's a little confused of what's going on. And basically what ends up happening is Sunjay Dutt reveals to Mark Briscoe that he's got a match for Rampage this Friday. I'll give you the lineup in a moment. But also, Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett wanted a little advice from Mark Briscoe about FTR. Like, just in casual conversation, like, oh, you beat FTR. And then Mark Briscoe's like, oh, so that's what this is all about. They showed up at the ranch playing with his kid, hanging out. They're all trying to get a little info, you know, from Mark Briscoe on how to defeat FTR. So Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett issue an open challenge. Well, not really open challenge, but a challenge to FTR for a tag title shot at Double or Nothing next week on Dynamite. FTR will be in the ring accepting that challenge. That match will be on. Ricky Starks over Juice Robinson clean tonight. I didn't like it at all. I'm now starting to call them not Bullet Club Gold, but it's turning into Bullet Club Mold. After the match is over, clean win for Ricky Starks. Jay White attacks Ricky Starks. That's the match that's probably going to get set up for Double or Nothing. But the commentators are pointing out that Ricky Starks, you know, Sean Spears is not there tonight. So Sean Spears isn't there to even this up. And I'm saying to myself in storyline, well, Ricky Starks don't have any friends in the back to make the save. You know, Orange Cassidy with the random save last week for Adam Cole, why not come out there for Ricky Starks? You know, so it was a little goofy, to be honest with you. I'm not feeling it. Not feeling it with Bullet Club Gold. So, main event tonight, as we all expected, Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, and Darby Allin defeat Sammy Guevara and MJF in the tag match. So now it will once again be a four pillars match for the AEW Championship at Double or Nothing. Again, people with the self-induced drama a couple of weeks ago, oh, why are they going to do Sammy versus MJF? Everybody wants to see the, again, that's the scenic route. AEW did the scenic route. Everything that ended up happening, happening exactly how we expected it to be. Right down to the Tony Khan announcement, you know, making the match with the stipulation that if Jungle Boy and Darby Allin win, they're in the match and blah, 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 blah. The match was fine tonight. I mean, was it over the top? No, it was a fun match, but it did what it needed to do. Again, psychology and telling a story in many ways is a lot more entertaining and a lot more memorable than just individual spots. So basically, during this match, you had MJF and Sammy Guevara on the same page earlier. They were in the back cutting a promo, putting themselves back, you know, in friends and hugging and all that. But we would obviously see it crumble towards the end of this match. Jungle Boy puts a snare trap on MJF, but Sammy Guevara breaks it up. Then we had a moment where Sammy Guevara and MJF are in the ring, and they're doing a clap. And, you know, you get the crowd doing it as well, even though they're healing it up. And MJF tells Sammy that both of them are going to go dive outside the ring onto Jungle Boy and Darby Allin. So they're in the middle of the ring, and they're doing their clapping, and the fans are going along with it. And they run to the right side of the ring, bounce off the rope, and they start running to the opposite side of the ring, and Sammy Guevara dives over the top rope onto Jungle Boy and Darby Allin, and MJF stops. So Sammy does his move, and then Sammy looks at MJF and is like, what the fuck? What are you doing? Like, he stopped. Then, a little few moments later, Sammy Guevara, with a little bit of momentum on Jungle Boy in the ring, and MJF tags himself in. Sammy's a little bit pissed off. MJF is saying, hey, we're both trying to win here. We're trying to win here. So a few moments later, Sammy Guevara, wise ass himself, he tags himself in while MJF was getting the advantage on Jungle Boy. And he tries to pin Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy kicks out. And Sammy says the same thing to MJF. Hey, we're trying to win here. So MJF gets in the face of Sammy. MJF slaps Sammy. Sammy slaps MJF. MJF goes to the outside of the ring. And then we have to have a little bit of confusion between Darby Allin and Jack Perry. Sammy Guevara is laid out by Jungle Boy, and for some reason, Darby Allin blind tags himself in. Somehow, Jungle Boy didn't realize that Darby tagged himself in. So Jungle Boy goes for the pin, but the referee doesn't do the count. And Jungle Boy is wondering, like, why aren't you counting? And in the meantime, Darby Allin is climbing the top rope and jumps off to do the coffin drop, and Jungle Boy had to move out of the way the last second so Darby could land on Sammy Guevara. So Darby Allin pins Sammy Guevara. We're now back to the Four Pillars match. Jack Perry and Darby Allin a little bit annoyed at each other that the match was over. MJF looks very, very concerned. And we go off the air as I personally, last week, I mean, I understand why they closed with Takeshita getting, you know, screwed, pun intended, you know, but you kind of feel like maybe the Four Pillars should have gone off the air last week. I mean, this is supposed to be the big money match, but they did it right tonight. Not a bad episode of Dynamite. Very easy, easy watching, like not too much, you know, to you like random shit. I mean, there was some, there's always some, but this week was kind of easy viewing. So now, as far as Rampage, next week's Dynamite and Double or Nothing. Rampage this Friday, for those that are getting this episode early, it's going to be on at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. So it's going to be on about 90 minutes before SmackDown. The Firm Deletion is going down. It's going to be the Hardys, Hook, and Isaiah Cassidy versus Stokely Hathaway, Ethan Page, Big Bill, and Lee Moriarty. They're going to be on the Hardy compound. It's already filmed. That will air Friday during Rampage. We will have Mark Briscoe versus Preston Vance. Jade Cargill will face someone, which should be a squash. And then we're going to have the Lucha Bros and El Hijo del Vikingo versus Aaron Solo, QT Marshall, and Powerhouse Hobbs. I am not feeling what they're doing with Hobbs. It almost feels like this may lead to a babyface turn by Hobbs. I don't know why. And I'm sure it will be accepted by the fans. I mean, I don't know. I just think back to those vignettes of Hobbs walking the streets of Cali and, you know, where it's ended up. I don't know. I don't feel like Hobbs' stock has gone up in the last couple of months. Next week's Dynamite, all they've announced so far is that FTR will obviously accept the challenge of Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. John Moxley and Kenny Omega in a steel cage. And then we're also going to have Orange Cassidy versus Daniel Garcia for the International Championship. Double or nothing right now. As we said, we're probably going to get Jay White versus Ricky Starks. We should also get, and should be a six-woman tag, probably the Outcast versus Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Hikaru Shida. Adam Cole versus Chris Jericho should also be made official next week. We have the four pillars battling it out for the AEW World Championship. We will have official next week Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett challenging FTR for the AEW tag titles. We should also end up with Wardlow versus Christian Cage for the TNT Championship. And then we have the Elite versus the Blackpool Combat Club. Obviously, that match cannot be put together yet until this cage match goes down and everybody gets involved and it turns into an absolute, you know, I don't want to call it clusterfuck, maybe a slobber knocker, because I hear clusterfuck, it's usually a negative reference. But once this goes down and everybody gets involved, that'll set up their match for Double or Nothing. So, you know, just going over that right now, that's seven or eight matches, you know, already. And I don't know if we're going to get the usual 14 matches, including, you know, their dark matches, quote unquote. But it's shaping up to be a decent pay-per-view. You know, NXT doing Battleground the same day, very interesting. Same time as well. And I'm not sure which one I'm going to watch live at the moment. I'm kind of leaning towards NXT, and I'll tell you why. It's not about being a bigger fan than NXT or AEW. I don't look at it like that. I just think for that night, NXT might be easier viewing. And AEW, once it's in the books, you get a little idea as far as what was good, what was, you know, skippable. And maybe I watch that on the replay, and maybe a couple of matches we can watch on two times the speed. So we'll see. But it's still a couple of weeks away. So we got a lot that's going to go down between now and then. So with that said, everyone, I am done for this episode of Wednesday Night Dynamite. You know, I would love to get some of your feedback. You know, going back a little retro, a little old school with the audio only. You know, doing some of the recording earlier, which makes tonight a little bit easier. Legitimately, right now, it is only 10:41 p.m. Eastern, so I will have this episode online for downloading by 11. You know, I mean, up until last week doing video, you know, we would go off the air around midnight, and then by the time you edit and upload and everything, it's about 2 a.m. And, you know, I don't fall asleep very quick, you know, even though I take Ambien and gummy melatonins. And, you know, gummy melatonins could be addicting, especially the orange flavor. But definitely let me know, you know, how did you like this episode? Now, next Wednesday, I think, you know, for all intents and purposes, we will do a live episode of this. No reason why. And I don't want anybody to think that, you know, live is going to go away on Wednesdays. Just we'll pick and choose the weeks. You know, some weeks I definitely would, you know, it allows me a little bit of a break as well. The way we did today's show was easy, a lot of fun, you know, end up putting the show up early. So definitely want your feedback. So that's it. I am out of here. Don Tony show will air this Saturday on normal schedule at 11:05 a.m. Now, we have Backlash Saturday as well. So as of right now, I'm doing Backlash's recap Sunday night, 8 o'clock in the usual sit-down time slot. So we'll probably do a split episode Sunday night. We'll do a Backlash recap. We'll also do a mini episode of the sit-down. So maybe you'd like to join me. I'll be on YouTube for that. And we'll have it on the audio platforms as well. For my Patreon friends and my YouTube channel members and the Elite, we will be putting up the predictions contests for Backlash. It'll be up Thursday. You should have about 48 hours to put your predictions in. And with only seven matches announced, you know, the predictions should be pretty simple. You could start thinking about Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar. That will be the tiebreaker. So start thinking how long you think that match is going to go down, because that will be the tiebreaker. And I expect that tiebreaker to definitely come into play for this one. So, all right, everyone, I'm out of here. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And, yeah, we'll do your next episode next Wednesday, the 10th of May, 10.05 p.m. Eastern. Remember the Discord. If you want to tune in live for the audio, next Wednesday, 10.05 p.m. Eastern on Discord. Take care, everyone. Be well. Talk to you all soon.